Can you hear?
You throw me one, yeah.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the March 7th True Commission meeting. Tommy, you'll start off.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Tony Sabuni.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC 4.
Charles Barr, President, Representation.
Raymond Day, Southeast CPAC.
Council President.
I'm Kim Pryor, representing the Urban Core CPAC.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. Welcome, Andrea. So you were just appointed the other day?
Yep.
Just approved? Well, congratulations. Okay, has everybody read the minutes? Do I have a motion?
Move approval of the minutes as published.
Second.
There's been a motion and a second to approve the minutes as published. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes carry. Motion carries. Is there any public comment? Okay, Tommy, the auditor report. Just for the record, the chairman, Dr. Hargrove, is going to be late today.
Thank you, through the chair, to the commission.
One more thing I should mention. We have one excused absence. Velma Roundsville has had pneumonia, so she's recuperating from that.
Through the chair to the commission, the council auditor's office has released one report since the last true commission meeting. That report was report number 880. It's the quarterly summary for the 3 months ended December 31st, 2023. That was released on February 14th, 2024. As I go through this, please keep in mind that these are the first quarter projections, and likely these projections will change as we go through the year. As of right now, these are the projections through the first quarter. I'll start off with the independent agencies. For JEA, JEA is projecting balanced budgets at year end. However, $28.2 million for additional dollars for capital projects. They're budgeting or projecting to come from surplus revenues from the prior year, same as reserves on the electric side. Make note that they're not expecting to exceed their appropriation for the year. However, because they're taking these monies from reserves, they have to come to City Council for that. Which they have not done as of yet. Water and sewer is going to be taking $16.1 million in reserves for capital projects, and the district energy system is projected to exceed the budget for $221,571 for capital projects. And these are all will be, since these are coming from reserves, they'll need budget amendments for that. For JTA, they are projecting no budgetary stress as a whole for the year. However, if the first quarter projections hold, again, first quarter projections, they will need to do a budget amendment for the CTC, which is the connection division. They are projected to be $2,097,000 over budget, and that's mainly due to additional costs for the contract provider and as well as fuel costs being above budget. That is the revenue for this is coming from the bus division and the transfers between divisions. So the bus division is still within its budget. They have a contingency of about $4 million to cover unanticipated cost. So right now the budgets division is still in budget. However, the CTC division, the connection, is over budget or projected to be over budget right now. Actually, and actuals, of course, they're under, but they're projecting to be at year end. Also, the ferry division is projecting to be over budget by $203,000, and that's mainly due to increased fuel cost. And again, that'll be covered by transfer from bus operations on the contingency. For JPA, the Port Authority, they anticipate no budgetary stress at year end. They are projecting a $2.5 million surplus at year end, and that's mainly due to higher than budgeted cruise revenues, investment income, and savings in debt service. For JAA, they are also anticipating no budgetary stress at year end. They're projecting a surplus of a little over $17 million, and that's due to additional investment income and debt service savings from reductions in financing due to delays in Concourse B, and also reduced spending due to delays in construction of the new parking garage and parking lot at JIA, as well as delays in repaving the taxiway at Cecil. On the city side, for the general fund, general service district, they are projecting at year end a $25.4 million favorable budget variance at year end. What's contributing to that on the significant variances, ad valorem taxes is projected to have a higher than favorable budget variance of $5.6 million. Due to final property values being higher than the preliminary values. Also, net transport revenue is projected to have a higher favorable budget of $1.8 million, and utility service tax is projected to have a favorable budget variance of $1.3 million. While state shared revenues is showing a projected favorable budget variance of $562,000 overall within this line, the local government half-cent sales tax is projected to have an unfavorable variance of $5.7 million, which is currently being offset by projected favorable variances of $2.8 million for both the county and municipal shared revenues. So, however, just as a side note, if the half-cent sales tax is not performing as well, the $5.4 million could actually go up to $9 million at a negative variance. So those favorable variances are offset by some unfavorable variances. Franchise fees are projected to have an unfavorable variance of $2.2 million. And also charges for services are projected to have an unfavorable variance of $1.2 million. And that's mainly due to projected revenue shortfalls within the Sheriff's Department. Specifically, that would be off-duty reimbursement is projected to be lower than budgeted due to a transition to an outside vendor. Also, there is a favorable budget variant. General Fund, General Service District expenditure variances are projected to net an overall favorable budget variance of $19.7 million. The largest component of the favorable budget variances are $7.6 million in pension costs, and that's due to favorable budget variances in the General Employee Pension Plan and Public Safety Pension Plan defined contribution costs. And then also internal service charges are projected to have a favorable budget variance of $7.5 million, primarily due to favorable budget variances in fleet internal service charges due to lower fuel costs and also delays for vehicle replacements. However, given the volatility in fuel prices and also the timing of when the vehicles are placed in service, this favorable variance may change in future quarters. Also, projected budget variances of $6.8 million in salaries and $3.4 million in employee-provided benefits are due to vacancies. Cover the Sheriff's Office expenditures by the department. The Office of the Sheriff, overall, the Office of the Sheriff is projected to have a favorable budget variance of $13.1 million. The Patrol Enforcement Department has a projected favorable budget variance of $10.3 million, and that's primarily due to a positive budget variance and $5.1 million in personnel costs due to vacancies and $5.2 million in internal service charges, primarily due to the fleet internal service allocations, which is based on the fuel costs and timing of replacement vehicles, as I mentioned earlier. Also, the Corrections Department has a projected favorable budget variance of $4.3 million, and that's primarily due to $2.4 million in personnel costs due to vacancies, and also a $1 million favorable budget variance in professional and contractual services related to the security guard and inmate health services contract. Investigations and Homeland Security Department has a projected unfavorable budget variance of $2.1 million, due to it's in personnel cost related to overtime expenses. Other than the departments of the Office of the Sheriff, following departments had an unfavorable budget variance. That was the Jack's citywide activities is projected to have an unfavorable variance of $3.9 million. That's due to salary and benefits lapse that is placed in this activity. Also, the mayor's office is projected to have an unfavorable budget variance of $182,125. And that's due to unfavorable projected budget variances in salaries of $84,959 due to current staffing of the office, internal department billing of $75,000 related to security to the mayor, provided to the mayor. I will note, historically, the mayor's office has not been charged for any security costs that exceed budget, so this unfavorable variance may not occur. And also, the third reason is employer benefit provided benefits of $63,000 due to filling vacant positions and health plan elections of the new staff. And then the Office of Ethics is projected to have an unfavorable budget variance of $2,880, and that's due to mainly due to projections for the budget office for part-time salaries. That's just a quick overview of the quarterly summary.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments?
One question.
Sure.
And apologies for missing your meeting. I saw in the city venues ASM fund section on page 5 that had the same line from the last quarterly summary regarding the line that said currently ASM and the administration.
Nope, they're still as we discussed in the previous meeting, they're still having discussions. I will make mention the city's venues ASM is projecting again to exceed budget by $2.9 million. So, however, that's permitted by contract, provided the the additional revenues with written authorization from the city, and that's the ongoing discussions that they're having. I'm not privy to those discussions, so I can't tell you what's going on, but it was kind of discussed that the administration and ASM are talking to better manage this contract.
Okay. Mr. Carter, where are those discussions held, and are they not public?
I do not know where they're held. I don't believe they have to be public, Jeff. So. No, they don't have to be public.
Why not?
Because it's not the legislative. The executive one-on-one can negotiate with anybody.
Thank you.
Any more?
The JEA surpluses looks like we're almost at $48 million if you combine electric and water and sewer, 28.2 and 16.1. Is that correct? So I'm just curious because with $45 million or so in surplus, they're still talking about rate increases. Are you aware of any of that?
I know there's board discussions. I have. JEA is not my independent agency that I look at, but I don't know where they're at on the rate discussions. I know there have been discussions. And these surpluses are the surplus from last year, and it's mainly due to excess fuel revenues for the fuel surcharge. So it's coming from the fuel base rate, if I believe. I mean, on the electric side, looks like it's there's an over recovery of fuel revenues, and those will be used for future costs. That's the $11 million. So looks like also there's a projected favorable budget variance of $15.7 million for fuel and purchase power expense, and that's due to lower than budgeted fuel costs for natural gas. That's for this year, for this quarter. But yes, they do have a large I'm not sure of the total amount of their reserves, but they're required to keep a certain level of reserves due to the high capital nature of the business. I can't tell you if you know, that's their board decision of the rate increase.
Do you know what the minimum amount of the reserve is?
I don't.
And who requires that? Is that by ordinance or is that board?
I am not sure. Probably, huh?
There may be requirements within state statute.
I'd have to go back and look. I don't know on that.
Possibly bond covenants as well.
Definitely bond covenants.
In case we have to sell JEA.
Especially with what's going on across the street. I think like with most, because the state legislature, and I don't know specifics, so if I'm completely wrong and they tell me afterwards, it's probably the case. But at least I would assume that just like counties and cities have a minimum that the state statute requires that they keep in reserve, I would think that they'll also apply to state-related agencies and also to
seems like an awful lot of money. A lot to have a surplus. Is that a concern for anybody else?
Not really, if you consider what are the total revenues of JEA annually, a billion and a half in round numbers.
In round numbers, it's just they're projecting revenues just on the electric. Sorry, that's water.
On a combined basis?
Total revenues just for electric is $1.3 billion.
Okay, and then?
And then for water is $598 million.
So we're approaching $2 billion in revenues, mm-hmm. and a $50 million round number, reserve number. It's not really that much money. In reserves,
that it's a very capital intensive.
The about 10% would be about 2.5% of total revenues as reserves, and then. But if you, the other standard of comparison would be put it in terms of total assets of the JEA. Those are, Tommy, approaching $6 billion total assets?
Total assets, well, just for electrics, $4.2
billion. Water
approaching investment. $8 billion, a little over $8 billion in assets.
Any more?
One question. The ferry, is that part of? Is that just state, or is that part of the city?
It's JTA runs it. The state gave up the ferry back in the 90s, I believe. or early 2000s?
2004 or 5.
Yeah. I ask, it's because there's a news article this week about the owner of the ferry going bankrupt. And I'm wondering.
Microphone, yeah.
Just a news article that mentioned this week that the ferry owner was filing for bankruptcy. And I was just wondering how that may or may not affect. Said they're still going to operate, but
JTA owns the boats.
JTA owns the ferry and all the assets. Hornblower, which is the contract provider, provides for the personnel to collect the tickets to the captain to take the ferry to pilot the ferry boat across back and forth. So that they're the contract provider for that. If they were to cease operations, which in the article I read the article, they're stating they're not planning on ceasing operations. It's more, I think it's a reorg and things like that. But that, you know, they would have to contract out to another provider or hire someone that is qualified to pilot the boat.
Was it a Chapter 11?
It didn't say.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember from the article.
No, I figured.
Yeah, it was, and they've got another company has agreed to buy them out. I read an article about it just the other day. They've got a new investor that's going to put several hundred million dollars into the company and take over their operations.
The company operates about 8 or 10 different places, ferries and boats in other cities. I know this is just a small part, but
yeah, they operate them all over the country.
Yeah.
I did have one follow-up question that wasn't necessarily in the report, but I'd imagine it would be affected in the future. And I'm not sure if you're following it, but that bill that was going through the legislature, I believe that passed the House, I wasn't sure if it had passed the Senate yet, that directly targeted JTA's administrative-related expenses to kind of curb the percentage in which they could spend on that side of the books, and I was wondering if that's something that the council auditor's office would pay attention to.
We were paying attention to it. I'm not sure where it's at. I know it was in one of the houses that I haven't followed up yet. I know tomorrow's the last day of session, but so I'll have to go and see. And it's an average of 10% of all the agencies, transportation agencies in the state.
And then one final question. The half-cent sales tax deficit, sorry, I couldn't remember. You said it's at $5.4 million deficit, but it could go to $9 million?
If it continues on the path that it could, that's just a projection.
What path is it on?
Well, I mean, the having less than budgeted sales tax, and this sales tax is not the half-cent surtax. This is the half-cent that comes from the state in a formula. It's a 6% that comes in goes through several iterations through the Department of Revenue formula. And then it comes back to it's based on sales in Duval County. And it comes back to us in the form of revenue. Near the end of last quarter, we noticed, especially in looking at the budgets, when we were doing the budget, that half-cent sales tax had kind of started to decline a little bit, and that could be just from, you know, lack of spending. Money's tight now. Inflation's high. People spend less. So you're going to have less sales tax.
But okay, I understand that. But yet the half-cent sales tax that's on for referendum isn't in a deficit?
That'll be affected as well with purchases. But it's the – and we don't – for JTA, for example – they have the half-cent transportation tax
So I'm talking about like the half-cent sales tax that we voted on for schools.
That's separate.
Right. No, I know it's separate.
I
know it's separate. So if the half-cent sales tax has a deficit of $5.4 million because spending has decreased, wouldn't the other sales tax items also be in a severe deficit?
I think it's not apples to apples, only in the sense that the half, you correct me if I'm wrong, the sales tax that we approved as voters is something that's directly collected within the county, whereas the share of taxes that he's referring to is a share that each individual county gets from across the state based on a formula that's determined by the legislature and the Florida Department of Revenue.
Based on population and things like that.
So it's not going to be, it's not, the intake is not the same. So the factors of whether or not it's in a deficit or not wouldn't be the same either. That's not to say that there may be downturns one way or another, but it won't be the equivalent, if that made sense.
Right. And again, like I said, these are projections. Just coming up in April, we'll have the second quarter, and those start to firm things up a little bit more halfway through the year on that part.
And remember, this is not a deficit. This is simply a shortfall in projected revenue.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, it's a projection of projected revenue that is based on rolling history of our collections.
Okay. All right, that helps a little. Like, how are we running in this big, huge deficit here? So, okay.
Yeah, it's not a deficit.
Thank you. Well, he's using the term deficit, so I'm kind of literal. So.
Okay. Oh, and Mr. Carter, I just looked it up. I don't know why the signal was like really bad in here. It passed the Senate yesterday.
Okay. So go to the governor for signature.
Okay. Any more for the auditor? Committees, the audit committee, we didn't have a meeting. How about legislative tracking? Nothing. Mr. Zambuni, you want to give a report on the ASM?
Sure. Heather came in and we discussed
as best we could the AMS contract. And they're in negotiations with the city, continued negotiations on how the contract is going to be managed by the city. Now that's where we are, so we don't know what it is. My concern is it's very, very specific what has to be included, you know, by SMG or now its successor, which is you have the annual budget, but every month they're supposed to give all the documentation for where they're going and everything anticipated. So there really shouldn't be any surprises. And then the process goes, once the city's on notice, either they can just approve it and ask for an amendment to the budget, or the city has the option to approve it, but then take measures to decrease the budget in other ways so they don't have to ask for more money. So I don't know if the city ever does that. Plus, you know, I looked at the purchasing code, what to do with unauthorized purchases, but there's also language in the contract, you know, some which says that everybody recognizes that things could happen outside their control, but it's still there's an anticipation that there'd be notice, so there could be a proper addressing of the issue before the money was spent. But if y'all want, I can ask Jeff to see if we can get at least the copy of the one or two or three monthly reports prior to our determination of. But I don't know what we're going to accomplish, because according to Heather, there really isn't where it's going. Nobody has a final responsibility to make sure there's compliance.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear when I direct this. Who's Heather?
Heather Reber. She's in the council auditor's office.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right. Because I was like, who's Heather? I don't know who she is.
Got to come to the meetings if you're going to know the last names.
I know. And I was wishing to, but my boss felt she wanted to meet. All right, so follow up to that. So, and I expressed this concern, Jeff will remember this. I expressed this concern last year when the pre previous administration wanted to amend the contract to basically end the current form and then create a new one that would last for another
five years
or so, which makes sense because they were going out the door, but whatever. But it was kind of sold as a way for them to be able to kind of fix issues that they saw in the first contract that kind of dealt with it globally. So within the actual contract itself, there's no specific description of how the contract is supposed to be managed at all?
Sure. Well, it's not going to say how, that's on the city side. The bottom line is this is, if I could, I just took out a couple of pages on the documentation that they have to give, you know, because it's a 20 or 25 page contract. And I didn't know who was going to be there, but there's a provision to notice the city, and the city makes a determination, and they amend it or they decide to increase the budget or not increase the budget, but decrease expenditures elsewhere by using city forces or some other options to keep the price from going up. But so I don't know how the city's administering it, but from the council auditor's office, nobody took control or is assuming responsibility for, you know.
So the train's left the station.
Well, there's also a provision in there that says that the parties recognize that stuff happens and that there are things that could happen, but it still requires notice. And if you have a monthly report, not only on how things have went, but what you anticipate with all your balance sheets, you really shouldn't get behind. But from what we could tell, they just file them with, who did they, she says they record them with, but she doesn't know who reviews them for contractual compliance or anything.
So when, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just going to interrupt.
Well, don't brag.
I'm not. Well, you're a lawyer, and I trust your judgment. So in the legislation that authorizes contract, it had the specific provision that the city had to basically authorize any additional spending that is requested. But what it sounds like you're saying that there's also a clause in there that essentially says that stuff happens and the monthly reports is essence notice, and if the city doesn't do anything about it, then they can proceed with said spending?
If I could just read paragraph 7, the end of 7.5. The beginning of 7.5 is that they have to get a permission in advance. If you look on the second page there, but the last sentence is the city agrees that if costs increase due to actions or effects outside the control of SMG, then the mayor will request city council to amend the budget to provide for such expenditures.
But the spending that it seemed that they, if I remember, the spending that was referenced that went over budget was less to do with things that are out of their control, but more to do with like capital related or maintenance related costs. Am I wrong in that's what the overage was, or was it related to the sentence?
Well, I do not know specifically what the overage was about, but if we go to the sentence before that, not the foregoing notwithstanding, the city and manager recognize that certain costs related to facilities, operations, and employment may be outside the control of SMG. And then it's the last sentence. I mean, so that's a little bit of, you know, that's almost like a force, that's more than a force majeure. That's wiggle room for everybody.
Yeah, but not to keep on being a dead horse on this one, so I'll just let it go. But it seems like these two sentences are referencing costs or expenses that are essentially out of their control. So if the overages that went over budget that we don't know whether or not there was approved spend for, authority for, were not related to things that are out of their control, then that wouldn't really apply to those two sentences.
Yeah, but if you go back to 7.4 on the monthly report, they're supposed to identify that to the city so the city can make an administrative decision as to how they want to address the overage, either to say, no, don't do it, or we are going to let you do it, but we're going to otherwise reduce some other aspects of the contract to save the money so we don't have to go ask the council for more money.
Which is why we need the monthly reports to see. Okay. Full circle.
So, Daniel, I will also share that based on some things that I have seen, the city does not do a very good job at monitoring contracts.
Yeah.
And I will give you an example that I have recently seen in that the city gives property.
Commissioner, hold on, is this about the ASM report?
No.
Let's hold off on that. We'll go over it after this.
Mr. Chairman, then I would just ask, too, if it's the consensus of the entire commission that Jeff try and get us, if we can identify when this overage was identified and the one or two monthly reports before that, just so we get a feeling for it and see maybe SMG complied, and we need to see how the city can do a better job of what to do with it later.
Yeah, Jeff, can you do that? Thank you.
Thank you, and that concludes my report.
Kim, you want to go now, or Commissioner Pryor?
I can hold it for new business, okay, if that's what you'd like.
Okay. Is there any old business? Okay, new business, Commissioner Pryor. I just didn't want to get too involved with something else on his report.
Sure. So as an example of what I started to say earlier, the city gives away for free real estate that they own, and they give that away to nonprofits with the stipulation that within 2 years they do something with the property for affordable housing. I am aware of multiple properties that the nonprofit has not done anything with the property. It has been 4 or 5 years, and no one has gone to pull the property back or anything like that. And it is, it's a problem. We also have other examples of property that is sold, and there is deed restrictions that the owner must be an owner-occupant, yet an investor buys it and rehabs it and flips it. No one from the city monitors that. So the city does not do a very good job at managing contracts after they are inked. And I don't know what, if anything, we can do about that particular issue.
Somebody want to take a shot at it?
Raymond? So I would recommend that this could be an inquiry that we could direct to former Senator Gibson. It's my understanding she's working in contract compliance for the administration.
So that's the other part about contract compliance within the city. Contract compliance is not something that is globally managed within the city. Each individual department that signs a contract is individually responsible for their contract management. So even though the division of contracts and compliance wouldn't make you seem as if they're responsible for all city contracts, they're not. They're just responsible for the grants that the city gives out with
through the PSG process?
PSG or through direct appropriations.
Okay.
Or federal grants that they receive.
Right. So, Mr. Zabuni, look like you have some insights.
Yeah, I'll just say that our firm just had an issue of somebody getting property from the city. But all the deeds that come, they also have a reverter clause. And if you don't use it for the purposes that it's intended, or as it says, it has a cloud on the title and it reverts back to the city.
How do we enforce that reverter clause to prevent the transfer of property that Ms. Pryor has
referenced? Only that I know from our own firm being involved in one of them, we had to go back to the city, and what happened was is the original title company didn't catch that. So actually, they had to negotiate with the city, and they paid the city some $15,000 or $20,000 to remove the reverter, to otherwise remove the encumbrance on the title. So there is somebody, but generally it happens when somebody tries to flip it, and then you see that there's an encumbrance on the title when they do a title search, and they can't go to closing. But that does happen.
Right. But one of the other things that I was told could also happen is that the nonprofit could then simply buy the property by paying the assessed value per the property appraiser's site. And I think that is wrong as well, because
why do you feel that's not a proper process? Because it would seem to me that if they were given the property with the proviso that they do a certain action, mm-hmm, and then if they later make a determination that they're not going to complete that action, but they purchase a property at, quote, assessed value or market value, how does that injure the city?
Well, first off, we all know that assessed value is not true market value. That's one way.
Right.
Then the other way is, why are we now rewarding nonprofits who enter into contracts to do A, they don't do A, and now they can buy the property for way less than market value and do with it whatever they want? It is unfair.
Can you compile a list of these situations that you could bring to our attention or direct it to the administration?
I can tell you Truth and Grace nonprofit is one of them that is in that current situation.
Maybe an idea if you, like you said, that specific situation, if you can compile the facts so that way Jeff can send that to the real estate division so that way you can get someone to respond back in terms of why they didn't do
that. Mr. Chairman, commissioners, and some of this might not even be managed by the city. It might actually be done by HUD, you know, on some of those properties. So you're right. It's difficult to say that, because the city has, by its code, has a method to sell or divest itself of property. So that has to be followed, and they try and get as many, you know, requirements as possible. So, but some of the stuff, especially what you're talking about, HUD might come into it, for which the city really wouldn't have that much to say. Not the city council or the mayor necessarily, until something really bad happens.
I think it's worth inquiring to the real estate division about that specific circumstance. You can answer as to why that happened.
And moreover, I would recommend that we ask the real estate division for a list of any property that was disposed of by donation to nonprofits to determine have they been in compliance. Now, if this is going back 4 or 5 years, well, then the bulk of this falls under the previous administration. The current administration has an obligation to fulfill its responsibilities. So, unfortunately, they will get stuck holding the bag, so to speak. But I think it's worth making an inquiry to the real estate division for an accounting of all of those properties that have been transferred under that program.
And how they performed the compliance that you referenced.
Is that, Jeff, would I need to send you an email to request that, or do I just need to send an email, or how does that work?
I think the best, if the commission is asking for a list of all of the properties given for affordable housing purposes over the last, 3 years, you can direct me to do that, and I will send that to the real estate division.
And we do this in the form of a motion.
If you wish
to. Do we need a motion for that?
I move that the commission make a formal inquiry to the real estate division seeking information about properties that have been donated to nonprofits over the last 3 years, 5 years, okay, over the last 5 years, and a determination as to whether or not the recipient of those properties have fully complied with the requirements of the donation.
I'll second it. My question is, too, I believe that you also had one specific entity that you said you have information for. I mean, you might specifically ask for the history on for that, any donations to that one nonprofit in addition to this, just to make sure you get one that you know about. That's just, I don't know if that's an amendment or...
Would my motion be broad enough to capture that transaction?
It may, but they may sit on it because they want to compile all that information, 5 years worth, and it may take longer to get her
answer. I'd be open for a friendly amendment.
I'm trying to remember when, I think it was during COVID, so...
Say 2020?
Yes, 5 years would cover it. This nonprofit was given two separate properties in Springfield. They demolished one and built a house, and I don't know what they did with that house.
I would like to restate
the other
my
one
motion.
They haven't done anything with. So,
I'd like to restate my motion. I move that that we request the Real Estate Division to give us a report on the two specific parcels that were donated to the entity known as?
Truth and Grace.
Truth and Grace. The status of those properties and whether or not that organization complied with the terms of the donation. And moreover, I would now like to have that original motion to be broadened so that the city Real Estate Division will give us a report on all such transactions over the last 5 years.
Yes.
We've got a specific request, and then we're going to broaden it for a wider range.
Yes, to reaffirm his second.
So you withdraw your first motion.
I restated it.
Restated. That's fine with the amendment. I'll second it as long as it is.
Okay, y'all heard that motion.
Yes.
Are there any
discussion? Just
let's ask Jeff to restate the motion, please.
Jeff, did you get it? So you can restate it?
Hold on just a sec. I just need a scrivener. It's not Truth and Grace. It's Grace and Truth, CDC.
Right. Grace and Truth. CDC. Community Development Corporation?
Yes.
Okay. Are you familiar with them, Jeff?
I've heard of them, yes.
Okay. All right. So if you want to read back the motion, then we can open discussion. I'm sorry.
No.
You're the chair.
No. Yeah, if you'll read it back because I can't. I don't have it memorized.
I'll have to clean it up some, but basically the motion will ask specifically for information on two properties conveyed to Grace and Truth CDC in Springfield and their current status and compliance with their donation.
Terms of donation.
Terms of donation. There you go.
And moreover. And
then more broadly to ask for 5 years of information on all properties donated to nonprofits and whether they have fully complied with the conditions of their donations.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, you've heard the. Oh, there's more discussion?
Yeah. I don't know if we want to ask whether they've complied or not because real estate can just say yeah. So perhaps the question could be for them to tell us what happened. With the prop, because we know what they should know what the terms are. Now, 9 times out of 10, the terms are that the nonprofit must use the property for affordable housing, but there may be a one off when that is not required. So we would need to know what the terms were and what the outcome was.
Is the motion specific enough that the Real Estate Division will need to provide documentation on all those transactions? Or do we need to then amend?
It's just a request. And I would suggest we would amend to provide all documentation which shows the disposition of the property to the present day.
I accept the friendly amendment.
You got that, Jeff?
Can I ask a question just out of curiosity? It has to do with the motion, but I'm not seeking to amend it. Where is this property? I'm curious. In Springfield.
At the corner, on the southeast corner of 6th and Ionia.
On the east side of Maine.
On the east side, yep. We call it the pool house, just because it used to be a pool hall downstairs, and upstairs there's two apartments. And it is, they've done nothing with it, and it is continuing to deteriorate, and it's demolition by neglect.
That's the eastern frontier of Springfield.
Okay, before we vote, does anybody need to hear it again?
No.
Okay.
Save Jeff some.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Question for you, Mr. Chairman. I guess to Ms. Mooney as well. To get the monthly reports that you're requesting, would that come from Council Auditor or from the Division of Sports and Entertainment, or where would it come from so that we make the request?
Well, I am absolutely assuming that Sports and Entertainment actually get monthly reports. If they don't, then the only people to get it from would be from SMG or their successor, but I would say from Sports and Entertainment.
So do you need anything? Oh, were you on 6? So to get your reports, do you have the connection to be able to do that, or do you need a motion like we just did in order for you to be able to do
that? No, I buy tickets like everybody else. I've got no connections. No, it's, so the answer is no. I was going to ask Jeff if he was going to be able to get them, you know, without us doing a public records request on, you know, on one of our city agencies or divisions.
Probably what I would do is get together with Ms. Reber and see if we can figure out who in the city actually gets them, whether they go to sports and entertainment, whether they go to the CAO's office.
I believe when she was talking, she said that accounting gets some reports because they have to enter into the one-class system.
Accounting would get the financial reports. Maybe I'll start with accounting and work my way from there.
The only thing that I would say is if you can't get there, I'll call Mr. Fackler or Lasekia, somebody in the general counsel's office, and tell them that's what we need, or under the authority of the chair and the commission, of course. I assume if we're going this far, everybody's in support of us wanting the city to get it right and to be in a position to properly shepherd these contracts or this contract.
Absolutely. Yes.
Success is our only goal here.
All right. Any more new business? All right. Commissioner comments?
Maybe a suggestion, too. We were talking about possibly having NUCA come in. NUCA really, you know, I talked to the NUCA folks. They have some issues mostly with JEA, and we were stacking NUCA up possibly for today and moved them back a month. My suggestion is let me try and get with ABS and the home builders and folks like that to deal with the city more to see how things are going and how they'll be impacted by the resolutions, if that's what y'all want to do, and the new thing. What I think we need to do now that the first quarter is over, if you remember, Mr. Freeman came in, and he appeared to be somebody that was paddling upstream, and he had a lot to do, and he didn't know how he could do it. I would suggest that the next meeting we find out how much he's been able to accomplish in one quarter. Otherwise, we're going to come to the end of the year, or if he needs other resources, I know how much he had. I have a copy of the old policy manual, but they're going to tear that up and start all over again. But I think that after the first quarter, let's see if he's even got off the starting line.
I would agree with that, only in addition to the fact that we're going into budget season, and if there's any advocacy that the commission wants to do in terms of, because we said this when he came, to support any kind of motion to say he needs more resources, this would be the time to do it because
I agree.
This is when the budget will start to get created for next year.
Mr. Tyson?
I'm good.
Henry?
Tommy,
Mr. Carter?
Through the chair, in the commission meeting minutes from February, in June, it looks like Dustin Freeman is supposed to be scheduled for procurement manual drafting update.
That's true, and I've suggested we change that to bring him back to see what he's done after the first quarter as opposed to waiting for it to be half over. Because, and like you said, we don't want to wait till the last minute if we have to advocate or suggest for more resources so he can be successful in his job.
When do we want him back?
Pardon?
When do we want him back then?
Next month.
Next month.
That'll give him, that's the end of the first quarter, so that'd be April.
Okay.
If that pleases y'all, I mean, it's whatever.
So you want Dustin Freeman here in April. When were you going to do the home builders and ABS? You want that
to
be
to their general counsel?
Maybe May for them?
June.
So
we're
swapping.
Yeah.
And Jeff, have you been in communication with FOP and firefighters about the date?
I have not.
Okay. Right. I'll follow up on that.
It was a good meeting, good questions. I don't have anything except, again, congratulations, Andrea. What's your last name again?
Letizia.
How do you spell that?
L-E-T-I-Z-I-A.
You're going to have a lot of
Day.
I just wanted to welcome Andrea to the commission, and I recommended her to Council President Salem, and he was very happy to reach across the aisle in a bipartisan manner and nominate her for confirmation. So, welcome.
And I brought donuts to celebrate your admission to the commission.
Commissioner Pryor?
I'm just curious what everybody thinks about using pension funds to fund the Jaguar Stadium. Those are my comments. I will share my thoughts, but I'd like to hear yours. What?
I said that's a small subject.
Well, I assume that they
is
have
this
a board
something that we want to get a discussion, or this was your final comments?
Maybe it's something to think about for next meeting, but I certainly think it's something that this group should be thinking about.
Well, we don't know what it is. The city's got to get funding from somewhere. The police and fire trust fund has over $5 billion. If they can get it's going to be paid back over a number of years, and if they get a rate more comparable to what they can get on the open market and save them just a point, I don't know what they're going
to. My understanding from what I have read in a very cursory manner, I've not dug into this any detail, that the rate on the debt, if borrowed from the pension fund, would be 6.5%, and I believe we can borrow in the market 3.84%. Is that roughly where current municipal debt is?
Oh. Okay.
So, 250 basis point premium in order to avoid going to the market. Now, they would argue that some of the offsetting economies of not going to the bond market and all
costs,
the legal costs and the fixed costs of doing a bond issue would, but I don't know that would counteract 250 basis point difference.
I will say,
especially on $800 million. So
I think it came up, Mr. Weinstein came up to the podium during finance. And two additional points. Well, first, reaffirming there is no deal. No one's seen anything yet. So it's kind of like it's been more talked about in the news than anything. At least that's what was said on the record. But in addition to that, I think he also had mentioned that if were a deal were be in play, that both sides would have I forgot the specific term, it's a financial term, where they would basically be able to call in.
It would call the bonds.
Call the bonds on both ends. So if the economy got better and the rates became better and the city wanted to be able to pay the money back and go to the bond market to be able to do it, the same thing.
Call the bonds and then issue new bonds at a lower rate and then pay off the existing.
Correct, and then vice versa, the same thing for the pension board as well. So that way they could consider it as actual funds that the pension board had as opposed to a liability, which would reduce the percentage of funded liability.
Percentage of unfunded liability.
Correct, thank you. I was trying to remember the terms, but
I'd like to see if Commissioner Letizia would have any comments to offer about her background. And
I guess I skipped her. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm speaking to the mic.
I'm currently the compliance accounting manager at Vistar. I love this idea simply because I spent 14 years in a public company doing budget to actual variance analysis for our annual. We were a public company, so our annual audit. And I am currently a CPA, been that for about 15 years. So this was so incredibly appealing because I know it's really strange to say this, but I love budgets.
Thank you for your interest and your participation.
Mr. Clement, you got anything?
Yes, sir.
Okay, is there a motion to adjourn? Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, hold on a minute. Before I hit the gavel, let me welcome Chairman Chambliss Hargrove. Here, I'll let you say we're adjourned. Hold on a minute. Well, before you do, we have a new member, Andrea Letizia, new commissioner.
I'm going to come over and... Oh.
Very nice to meet you.
Hey, sit down now, I'll adjourn us. Commissioner, have you... Or not commissioner. Commissioner Chairman, have you got anything you'd like to add? Well, we were actually waiting for you to give the chairman's comment. This was the shortest meeting we've had yet.
Yeah. I know. What happened?
You don't want to ask that question. Don't ask that question. That's not the question.
I cracked a whip on him. We didn't have a 40-minute speaker.
What?
There you go. There's an hour right there.
No, he got here late. He missed.
What?
Yeah.
I just offered an emotion, as usual.
Very tame. There you go.
Hey.
All right. I didn't want to reach across you in the middle of it.
I was going